Case number 15-1035, Mayor Terminals, LLC, Petitioner versus Federal Maritime Commission et al. Mr. Bress for Petitioner, Mr. Graham for Respondent.
Good morning, Judge Garland. May it please the Court. Because the Commission has conceded that two of its justifications can't sustain the order, this appeal is now focused rather narrowly on the Commission's ruling that the benefits of retaining Maersk as a carrier justified giving better rates.
May I ask a question that is not absolutely clear from the record or the briefs? Did Maersk Sealand not only ask for a lower rate, did they ask for a preferential rate? Were they specifically asking that their rate be in preference to the other port operators?
No, they did not, Your Honor. They just wanted a lower rate, not necessarily a preferential rate, which of course brings into play the Commission's ruling in Ball Mill, where they said no blame attaches in that case to the port for giving Weyerhaeuser a particularly good deal, but having done so, it had to extend the same deal to others, to its other tenants.
So is the key issue in this case only whether the deal given to Maersk Sealand should have been extended to your client or to all other port operators?
Your Honor, we're just arguing on behalf of our client. It may be that other port operators had different terminals with different characteristics. It's not something that's part of our case.
The key to your case is not that the port authority made a mistake in giving a low rate to Maersk Sealand. It's the gravamen of your case is that it wasn't extended to you.
That's right, Your Honor. I mean, this is a preference case, and you know the real question is, did they err in holding that it was okay to prefer, if you will, APM Maersk to Maher on the grounds essentially that APM Maersk had a carrier affiliate that was threatening to leave the port?
The opinion says that Maersk could have left the port and devastated, but that you couldn't.
Your Honor, what they were really talking about is that Maersk, the carrier, of course, can send its ships to any port that it would like.
It wasn't Maersk, it was Sealand.
Well, it was Maersk and Sealand, the carriers, Your Honor, as compared to APM Maersk, which is the terminal operator.
That's what I mean. It wasn't right. The terminal operator threatening to leave, it was the carrier.
They would have left with them, of course. That's the whole point to it. But nobody cared at the port, really, whether APM Maersk qua APM Maersk was a marine terminal operator there. The whole key to this was where the carrier business would go.
Yeah.
And in that respect, this case really is on all fours with a case that was decided merely 3 years before the leases in this case were signed, and that's Ceres.
But in Ceres, they say that they don't believe the claim that that they would leave.
Well, Your Honor, they say that.
And that the other one, Ceres, was willing and able to provide the same kind of guarantee. While in this case, it's the opposite. They do believe the threat that they'll leave, and in fact, the person who controlled Mayer at the time before you did the leveraged buyout was agreed with that. So isn't this is a sort of a unique case. So imagine the facts are, as I'm going to put them to you just for the moment. I know you dispute the facts. Imagine the facts are that, and I don't care whether they're called Maersk or Sealand or whatever, that they say, we're going to leave. The facts are that if they do leave, and that they can get a $120 million better deal at Baltimore, and if they leave, it's going to be devastating for the port, including devastating for Mayer. And Mr. Mayer says, yeah, I totally agree with that. This is bad. I know it's bad, but it's this or we're out of business in the end because the port's out of business. So in this kind of unique case where the company who is suing here agrees that it would be a disaster for the port, under those circumstances, isn't that a transportation factor?
Your Honor, I'd like to reserve a moment, of course, to attack the premises budget, but given that, no, Your Honor, I don't think it's clear for the following reason. What we're really talking about here is an attempted tying arrangement, which is Maersk the carrier using essentially market power from being a dominant carrier to drive a preferential rate for its marine terminal operator at the port, essentially extending its market power into the port. In other circumstances, Your Honor...
But it didn't even ask for a preferential rate.
Well, actually...
It asked for a lower rate, but not necessarily preferential.
Absolutely agreed, Your Honor. In other words, driving a lower rate.
Be careful the way you say it.
Your Honor, I accept the correction. Driving a lower rate for its marine terminal operator on the back of its market power. And so the question of whether that's... whether the distinct treating its marine terminal operator better than treating an independent marine terminal operator is okay.
In other words, whether that's reasonable. Let me refine the facts a little bit more. For whatever their combination of tying is, assume for the moment doesn't violate some antitrust law, no one's claimed that it does, they say, give us $120 million more, or we're going to leave and go to Baltimore. And imagine everybody agrees that if they, that they can do this, and that if they do do this, the port will be devastated and your company will go out of business. Okay? Totally out of business. The port will go down. You don't have the choice of going to Baltimore. You're finished. Not okay? Still not okay?
Well, Your Honor, I guess, as Judge Silberman pointed out, the problem here is not whether the port can say it's okay to give them that deal. It's the differentiation that's the issue.
Yeah, but they say... Also, so they also say that you could not make the same claim. That is, again, assume for the moment that that's correct. That you don't have a portability in the same way. So you think that you'd still have to give the...
Your Honor, I do. Uh-huh. It's not a question I don't think that this court has to address, because I don't think that the commission itself addressed any of this in its order.
I'm reading all this from the order, so I guess I have a different view about that.
Your Honor, they discussed the facts in their order. What they never really did do was straight up face the question of what is a transportation factor? How do we decide whether this... There's no discussion, for example, of whether a carrier can pressure a port to give its marine terminal operator a better deal, whether that's really a transportation factor. And it's a question that should be asked because... Transportation factors ordinarily have something to do with the service that's being provided and charged for. Now, it may have something to do with competition if the route over which you're traveling is one that's competitive. It may have to do with competition if the goods that are being transported are ones that people are competing about. But it always has something to do with what's actually being leased or provided. In this case, the different rate has nothing to do with what the MTOs themselves are providing at the port and are getting from the port. They're both getting land and facilities from the port to do shipping.
So does all this lead to the conclusion, Mayor says, I want $120 million. Under your theory, FMC says, sorry, that's not a transportation factor. Mayor moves to Baltimore and your company goes out of business. And that's perfectly reasonable?
No, Your Honor. Our view is that they could always give us the same deal that they gave to Maersk.
So if everybody in the port gets $120 million less than the market rate, the original theory was, I'm just using $120 million as the number. The FMC says this is the rate we would have, that your client got the, not your, yeah, your client, your predecessor, client's predecessor, got the rate that we would have given before Maersk threatened to reduce. So under your theory, everybody has to be given $120 million less. Is that right?
If they're similarly situated, Your Honor, as marine terminal operators.
Yes.
As marine terminal operators.
Yeah.
That might be, you could have a transportation factor if they're not.
Yeah.
But in this case, the distinction had to do with an affiliation, not with what they were doing as marine terminal operators.
Is there anything in that record about what the consequence to the port would be if both you and Mayor Scott, $120 million?
I have thought about that, Your Honor, and I think there's two things to keep in mind. Number one, if all ports are held to this kind of requirement, that you can't essentially cave to market power by carrier to treat MTOs differently from one another, then we don't know what the playing field would have looked like in Baltimore or elsewhere.
There would be... No, what, I'm sorry, I shouldn't talk over you. There wasn't any claim that Baltimore had to do anything wrong to give them the extra $120.
I just think it's unclear in the record. I agree that there's no claim. The other point, though, is that by putting all marine terminal operators on the same level, regardless of who their carrier affiliate is, you're going to promote efficiency in marine terminal operations. And by the way, it may be that Baltimore has a better port, and maybe it's more efficient for a carrier to go to Baltimore, all things considered. Those are things that I'm not sure the law would have a preference on. The law does have a preference generally on anti-tying, and that's true at the commission level regardless of whether there is an antitrust violation. You know, cases like Gulf Containers versus Port of Houston. It's not cited in my briefs because we didn't get into the tying issues very much on this appeal. But that case actually discusses that the port has found unreasonable numerous times attempts by ports, for example, to tie having a berth at the port with using other services at the port. So that is something that they tend to look at. Here, there was just no discussion at all of is this a transportation factor. They skipped it. They asked the question, and they said, we haven't proved it's unreasonable.
They use the two word transportation, but not factor. What was it, another word? Transportation.
Services. And they use that, Your Honor, in a place where they just, it's a tag along to an argument about whether there were, whether there was a subsidy in this case.
Would they not get Chevron deference with respect to the interpretation of transportation?
Absolutely, Your Honor. In fact, if I may, though, because I think it's critical to this appeal to actually address the premises of Chief Judge Kerlin's question, which is those are not facts that this court was reading about this case, about the question of whether Ceres could be distinguished from this case. There's two grounds on which they now argue it could. One is they say maybe we decided in Ceres, maybe we decided that case on the basis that we didn't believe that that Maersk was ready to leave the port or that it would have devastating effects if it did.
You mean Ceres?
So you don't mean Ceres.
Did
the commission say that in the Ceres case?
No.
I didn't say
that. No, Your Honor. It's utterly made up. What they did is they recited the facts in that case, recited the allegations by Ceres, by the Maryland Port Authority, which was that, A, they were really worried about Maersk leaving the port. The port had lost business over several years. Maersk itself had moved some of its operations to Norfolk, and Norfolk had provided incentives for Maersk to move all of its operations there. So they were quite worried about Maersk leaving the port, and they said straight out, and this is in the Ceres opinion, it would be devastating for the port if they did so. There is nothing in the...
However.
However, it doesn't matter to us. That's not good enough. And there's no indication.
From Ceres, they say the argument is unreasonable in light of Ceres' abilities to fulfill the terms of the Maersk lease, including the vessel called inherent in its cargo, Maersk, in its cargo guarantee.
I'd like to address that next.
Ceres was willing and able to provide the same sort of guarantee to MPA.
And I'd love to address that next.
That's
not true either, Your Honor.
It is true in Ceres.
They're playing with words, Your Honor. In Ceres, if we look to page 169 and 170 of the appendix.
That's where I'm looking.
All right. What they say on the, I think it's the top of page 169. I believe, top of page 169, right-hand column.
Yeah.
What they say is, and this is Ceres claiming, that they were fully capable of meeting guarantees comparable to Maersk's. Mm-hmm. What they were talking about is this, Your Honor. Ceres could not formally commit to particular vessels coming into the port. It didn't have its own vessels, and it did not provide a guarantee with respect to any other particular named vessels. All that was going on, and you can see this further down the page, is they talk about including the vessel calls inherent in its cargo guarantee. So all they were saying is they're bringing lots of cargoes in. To bring lots of cargo in, you need vessels to bring them in. So inherent in having committed to lots of cargo is an ability to bring lots of vessels. That is no different than this case. In other words, it is true that Brian Maher said, I can't commit.
Well, as a matter of administrative law, number one, an agency can switch its position in adjudication.
Absolutely.
Your argument is you have to explain your position.
Your Honor.
And also, an agency is entitled to some deference to interpret its own prior rulings, both of which are, so are they entitled to deference?
Absolutely.
Interpreting series.
A reasonable reading of it. But if you read series, of course, it's very clear. Series wasn't saying, I can name the vessels and provide a vessel call like that. They were just saying, we've got lots of cargo. In bringing all that cargo in, we're going to bring a lot of vessels in, by the way. And so we can commit to a lot of vessels coming in. Well, in this case, what the distinguishing factor is not a vessel call, but it's similar. The distinguishing factor here is a port guarantee. And what that is Maersk saying certain numbers of Maersk containers are going to be brought in here. Well, sure, it's true that Maher can't promise to bring Maersk containers, and indeed, perhaps not even particular named other carrier containers, but they're promising to bring in a ton of containers, and inherent in that in the very same way is an ability to meet the substance of the promise being given. And that's all that was going on in series. It's all that's going on here. And everything that they've tried to do is essentially to sidestep the hard question of, do we still think series was right? And, you know, we would submit that hard question is worth sending back. This isn't an empty formality, because when an agency is forced to the point of actually having to think about overruling something, they're going to think a lot harder about what the right decision really is. And it's not a foregone conclusion that they're going to decide that against us.
What about Ball Mill? You want to say something about that?
Yes, Your Honor. Ball Mill that was also distinguished on a completely, I won't put purpose in here, but an incorrect ground. In Ball Mill, what was going on...
The Commission says here they didn't specifically address the argument.
And what they're saying is the same thing, Your Honor, as they said in the other case, which is, in Ball Mill, you had Weyerhaeuser, which had threatened, in that case, definitely threatened to leave the port. It had already, Port of Newark, it had already negotiated with the Port Elizabeth to leave, unless it got... the ability to do its own back handling. It was a lumber operation. That same ability to do your own back handling wasn't given to others, including Ball Mill. Ball Mill complained about it. In that case, again, you know, the port said, but they threatened to leave, and this is a big lumber operation, and they would have gone somewhere else. And the commission said, that doesn't matter. And, but they went further. They said, look, we don't blame you. In fact, they said, no blame attaches to you for having given Weyerhaeuser a good deal. But having done that, you had to extend that deal to your other tenants. That was the holding in that case. And for the commission to come back and say, well, maybe we didn't believe that the threat was serious. Ordinarily, a court doesn't look to an agency decision and look for hidden findings of unsubstantiated...
No, but an agency can... Ordinarily, a panel of this court often looks at other panel, previous panels and distinguishes them on the facts. And properly or not, we defer to the agency's distinguishing of its previous cases. They say they're distinguishing this one on the facts. We don't now look to see whether the facts are exactly correct or not. We only look to see whether it's reasonable to distinguish it this
way. Your Honor, I think there's a distinction here, which is they're not distinguishing it on the facts.
Who's they, for instance?
Sorry, the commission is not distinguishing its prior decisions in series or Ball Mill on the facts. What they're distinguishing on is they're saying, maybe we made a finding in there of insubstantial evidence to support a conclusion. Mm-hmm. But you don't conjure that maybe that was the basis when there's not a hint that either those facts were disputed or that the commission disbelieved them. That's not the way we read opinions ever. When they say, these are the allegations and that isn't enough,
now,
as a matter of law, that's what they're saying.
What did the commission say with respect to the issue, and I must sound like a broken record on this question, concerning whether or not there was an obligation to extend the same terms to any other port operator, port PTO, is it, terminal operator, who asked for the same terms?
What they said in this case is that the two were different because we hadn't threatened to leave, Your Honor. And that's the exact same thing that, of course, was at issue in series.
That's all.
That's it. I mean, they've got two other grounds. I shouldn't say that.
No, but forget the other grounds because everybody agrees.
We hadn't threatened to leave, and we had said we can't provide the same port guarantee. But we couldn't provide that same port guarantee in the very same way that Ceres couldn't formally.
No, you're back to
formally,
your point. But
right.
Back to your point.
Exactly.
But is there any, that's the commission's view. What was the port authority's view as to why the rates wouldn't be extended, the same rates extended to the other marine operators?
Well, the port's view, again, is.
Is this in the record, incidentally?
What's that?
Is it in the record?
I just have their brief's view right here, Your Honor, and their brief's view is that it would be commercially irrational.
That's the only thing I saw, too.
Right. And that, of course, flies right in the teeth of Ball Mill.
What about the Petchem case in our circuit?
What about it, Your Honor?
Well, so the court says, Judge Buckley, the commission noted that although the CPA expected the demand for commercial towing to increase, the introduction of competition would cause Hvide, which was the existing tugboat company, to withdraw from the port. This would jeopardize the port's ability to assure reliable, competent towing services. Under the circumstances, the FMC concluded that the port authority's continuance of Hvide as exclusive provider was justified and therefore turned down Petchem. That is, the company that was there would leave, and there wouldn't be sufficient towing services if you let in another one, and we upheld it.
So, in other words, the company that was there
was
the only one providing
monopoly.
The towing services.
It was exhibiting its monopoly power. It was, saying, why isn't that?
Your
like
Honor, there's some inconsistencies generally in the case law. You've got 50-mile rule, for example, is a case where massive labor unrest was the thing that would be at issue that could shut down a port.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the reason given for essentially labor peace was the reason to treat certain shippers differently from others. And in that case, the commission said, that's not good enough. We see the result it might have on the port, but you can't treat similarly situated shippers differently. Our point really is if you go back to Ceres, which is the closest analogy, the only difference really is made up differences that came up. They brought up afterwards that are not supported by a reasonable
reason. Who is they? You're talking about the
commission.
The brief for the commission.
Sorry, the commission.
I want you to distinguish because our focus is on the commission rather than the brief.
Absolutely. The commission in its order, and by the way, they talk about how they spent a lot of time dealing with Ceres. There's two paragraphs that deal with Ceres and the threat to leave.
When you said they spent a lot of time talking about it,
in
now
their brief,
you're talking about
the commission in their current brief spends
know,
a lot of,
know,
sorry,
want,
I'm sorry,
it's the commission
Honor.
Order I want to focus on.
Right, and that's what I was focusing on. In other words, there's two paragraphs in the commission's order that deal with the threat to leave and whether that matters. And they both essentially deal with it on a, is Ceres different from this case?
Yeah. So if we were to rule in your favor, what would happen in a case where they were equivalent, Maersk and Mayer, but this time A and B. And A says, we're going to leave, and B agrees that if they leave, we will be devastated. Our prices, our own costs will go up because there'll be no way to fund the port otherwise. And everybody will go out of business. What happens then? We have to say, too bad, just go out of business, or what?
I think they've got to extend the same pricing
right.
to other similarly situated
right, now,
marine terminals.
What if there, I appreciate the question about whether there's any facts on this, but let me add facts, that if they did give the same discount, $120 million, the port would go under and cease functioning. Could not operate, having lost $240 million. Then what?
Your Honor, that may just be the way that it works if another port is situated in a way that is far more advantageous
so
in the marketplace.
The answer is that the port shuts down. You agree with that?
Well, Your Honor,
I'm asking you to accept my hypothetical.
That the port would shut down.
Yes, that's if it had to give the same $240 million discount off of whatever was they originally decided was the price that they could keep going, it would shut down. Your answer is that it's not a transportation factor to consider whether the port will shut down.
My answer, I think, Your Honor, to that hypothetical is it's not one that's been presented, and I think that
well,
the
not
commission
a good enough
have
answer
to...
for me because I need to know how to. If I want to write an opinion in your favor, I need to know why that would be different.
Well, Your Honor, if you want to write an opinion in our favor, I think it's actually as as easy as saying you've got another case that was dead on rights to this one. If you're going to distinguish it, distinguish it. If you're going to overrule it or put limits on where it might go, depending on the facts, do so.
That wasn't a case where the company said the port will suffer a dramatic decline in volume, which will raise the cost of the remaining business and motivate other major carriers to look for similar.
It is a case, Your Honor, on page 157 of the respondent's addendum, where MPA explains that the loss of Maersk would have been devastating to the port. Mm-hmm. That was in circumstances where the Port of Maryland had been losing traffic over the last decade. Its most important carrier was Maersk, and it told the commission it will be a devastating loss.
But the court did, but the commission didn't accept that. In that.
No, the commission
assume it
did.
Assume it did. Now I'm asking you, would it be reasonable to overrule Ceres then? That's my question. Okay. Well, forget about the administrative law question of whether they have one precedent on the subject or two or not. My question is it a transportation factor in your view? If the consequence of not giving the reduction is the closure of the port, is that a transportation factor?
Your Honor, I don't think it would require overruling Ceres. Let me start there, because Ceres never faced the question of whether what would happen in
but
that
you're
case.
Not answering,
and the answer,
answering Judge Garland's
happy
question.
Happy to.
This is a interpretation of the transportation factor. Under his hypothetical, would that be
no.
a transportation factor?
I don't believe it would be any more than it was in 50-mile rules.
Right, so the FMC would be required to make a decision that would close the port. Is that right?
I think that's your better argument, Your Honor. I will concede that it's a close one.
Do you think
and that it's something that
decide,
the port could
do you
would
think
get deference
to
on.
Decide that question to rule in your favor?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
Okay, why don't you explain that?
Your Honor, in this case, all that this court has to decide is that based on the allegations in Ceres that were not controverted and that were not found not to be true, the commission in Ceres made a ruling, which was that even if the marine terminal operator with a carrier affiliate, even if the carrier affiliate was threatening to go somewhere else, it was a credible threat, and their leaving would be devastating to a port, that is not a transportation factor that allows the port to treat that marine terminal operator better than an independent marine terminal operator. And we just want you to go back and either distinguish that case or overrule it or come out.
So you think even if we were to rule that the commission's decision here does not adequately distinguish Ball Mill and Ceres, even if we were to rule that, the commission would still be free to, assuming it could, overrule or distinguish those cases and hold that in a situation of the kind described by Judge Garland, it was a legitimate transportation factor.
Your Honor, we think that the,
is that
yes.
Right?
The answer is, first of all, yes. Uh-huh. And the other answer is we don't actually think the facts would show the type of effect on the port that Judge Garland's question would have.
Yes,
would
that's
have
an important point. The commission never discusses right. what the implication would be right. of extending the right. Maersk rates to other PTOs.
Absolutely, that does not. And look, all we really want is the commission to frankly address this question in this case. Think about its precedents. And decide what it thinks the right answer is and explain that. At that point, we'll be in a position to assess whether we agree or disagree with the explanation and whether it's sensible. But that's all we want at this stage.
Can you just show me the part about a devastating impact on the port in Ceres? Where is that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. That was on Respondent's Addendum, bottom of page 157 on the right-hand column. After a decade of suffering financial losses,
Yeah, go ahead.
It's in the very last sentence there. After a decade of suffering financial losses, MPA explains that the loss of Maersk would have been devastating to the port.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course,
that's just a description of MPA's view, right? That's not the finding of.
Oh, Your Honor, there is no finding.
Uh-huh.
Our point really is this. When you've got allegations from one side.
Just explain to me again. I'm obviously missing the point. Why when they say, when the FMC says, the reasonableness of MPA's decision is belied by its having ignored these factors. Ceres was willing and able to provide the same sort of guarantee. Why is that not?
You're pointing to this order now, Your Honor, yes.
To Ceres. I'm pointing to Ceres. Ceres itself.
Yes, so now if we're talking about the guarantee, Your Honor, we're moving
over. Is that different than what was, than their claim about devastating?
It is different, but in the following sense, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. As to that, what the commission is doing is putting an overlay in its decision on what it means by willing and able to do the same. And you know that based on what they actually say about it when they expand on it, which is page 169 and 70. Mm-hmm. That's where, at the top of the second column, mm-hmm. on 169,
yeah.
starting at the very, actually, the bottom of the prior column, they say, Ceres opines that had MPA undertaken a specific analysis of Ceres' particular abilities, it would have been shown that Ceres was fully capable of meeting guarantees comparable to Maersk. So mm-hmm. we'll start there. They're not saying the same. What that means is then they tell us what that means further down that same column. Mm-hmm. So if we go into the second full paragraph on that right-hand column, mm-hmm. I'm starting with the sentence that says, MPA's accordance of significance only to Maersk's vessel call guarantee.
Wait, where are you now? In the second
Sorry.
Column
second
on what page?
Column on the right on page 169.
On 169, yeah. Uh-huh.
The second full paragraph.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I am 1, 2, 3 sentences down.
Mm-hmm. That Maersk vessel call guarantee?
Yes. So Maersk yeah. vessel call guarantee does not guarantee. Oh, wait, sorry, the sentence after that. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. MPA's accordance of significance only to Maersk's vessel call guarantee
yeah.
by virtue of its status as a carrier. Because, mm-hmm. again, this is the port saying this is something that only the carrier can do. Mm-hmm. Is patently unreasonable in light of Ceres' ability to fulfill the terms of Maersk's lease,
yeah.
including the vessel calls inherent in its cargo guarantee. So what they're really saying is, no, they can't guarantee that Maersk vessels will come and a certain number of them will come. Or, frankly, Sealand's vessels will come and a certain number of them will come. What the commission is saying is, put form to the side. As a matter of substance, they're guaranteeing a lot of cargo. And yeah, to guarantee that much cargo, you need a certain number of vessels.
Isn't the bottom line that they're saying that they do not think it would be devastating to the port?
Wait a second. No. No, I don't think those two things are connected at all.
Well, you first pointed to MPA's claim that the loss of Maersk would be devastating to the
yes.
port. Yes. And you don't think that the paragraph on page 169 indicates that it would not have been devastating
to
the
port? No, Your Honor. They're talking about entirely different things. So what's going on the earlier page is if Maersk leaves,
yeah.
what effect will that have on the port?
Yeah.
When you get up to this other page, all they're really saying is Ceres will continue bringing in lots of traffic of its own. But they don't say that there's no indication or even hint that Ceres will be able to make up for the loss of all of the traffic of Maersk leaving. There's nothing that even comes close to saying that.
Okay. We'll hear.
Okay.
Any further questions?
No.
Okay. Can we hear from the commission?
May it please the court, Joel Graham for respondents.
Can you respond on this point? I had read this paragraph on 169 of Ceres as stating commission's view that the claim that Maersk leaving the port would be devastating was incorrect because Ceres could fill in. Now, is that wrong?
Well, in Ceres, these two discussions are separate. They have the mm-hmm. argument that the carriers threaten to leave the port, mm-hmm. which in Ceres the commission does not talk about. It makes no findings as to the severity or credibility of the threat. Mm-hmm. It points out that the respondents had raised that argument. Mm-hmm. It makes no findings as to that. So we don't know why that argument
it
was rejected.
It doesn't reject the argument.
It doesn't reject. So it implicitly rejects it.
Opposing counsel is correct that this paragraph is on a different topic.
Yes, that has to do with whether they can meet the cargo guarantee.
Okay.
And I'd like to point out that the cargo guarantee or the vessel call guarantee in Ceres is very different in nature than the port guarantee and what was going on in the present case. In Ceres, the port was looking for cargo. It wanted vessel calls and offered that to any sort of carrier who could provide them. commission said it was irrational.
Why is it not relevant to the commission to ask the question, if this rate is given to Maersk Sealand, what is the implication with respect to extending it to others? What is the economic? Isn't it relevant for the commission to consider that?
Because the law protects competition, not competitors. It's not worried about whether Mark can compete with.
I totally misunderstand. I do not understand the point at all.
Maybe I misunderstood your question.
I understand what you said. I don't understand why that is a response to my question. Okay. Why is it? Suppose hypothetically that extending to other port operators, what are they called? PTOs?
MTOs.
When MTOs. The same rate. Well, they're much smaller operators, let's say. Extending to them the same rates that you gave, that the Port Authority gave to Maersk, would have insignificant economic consequences. Suppose that were true.
That wouldn't make a difference.
It would make a difference to you.
It would not. Yeah. It does not matter whether, in the abstract, the port could have given that deal to MAR or other terminal operators. The question is whether it was reasonable for the port to treat APM Maersk differently than it treated MAR. And the commission addressed this in its order on this very question. Excuse me.
I didn't think there was very much addressing this in the commission's order. Perhaps I'm wrong.
It's page 37 to 38 of the commission's, and it says, quote, the question is, however, is not whether in a vacuum
Could you use the JA pages?
Absolutely. It's JA 1046 to 1047.
Yes, go ahead.
Bottom of 1046, quote, the question, however, is not whether in a vacuum the port had a legitimate reason to refuse Maersk's request for rent of $19,000 per acre. Rather, the question for the purposes of an unreasonable preference claim is whether the unequal treatment is not justified by differences in transportation factors. The terms unequal, differences, and discrimination all suggest that the commission must compare APM Maersk's and MAR's situations. The port's decision not to give MAR certain lease terms cannot be divorced from its decision to give those terms to APM Maersk as MAR proposes.
That's an explanation?
Yes, it is.
We give a preferential rate to Maersk because we give a preferential rate to Maersk. That's an explanation?
We give a preferential rate to Maersk because it provided
That paragraph you read simply said, we give it because we give it.
Right, and page 30s to 39 explain how APM presented risks and benefits to the port that MAR did not. There was no evidence to the contrary.
I know, but the commission never considers the economic consequence, the competitive impact. Nothing.
If it didn't consider the competitive impact, given the care with which it addressed MAR's arguments, MAR didn't raise these arguments about tying and market power until its reply brief.
I don't quite understand. I thought they, right from the outset, argued this violated the statute because it was an undue preference.
Correct.
Well, undue includes the economic impact of it, doesn't it, necessarily?
Well, undue includes a lot of factors.
Right. But I'm still looking for the commission's. I don't think the commission ever addressed this, the implication of this.
I don't know that it addressed the implication of the economic effect it would have on MAR and other terminal operators, but the facts don't suggest that they were.
The only thing we have from the Port Authority is it would be silly to give the same rate to MAR. That's all. Be commercially dumb. That's it.
Right, and then commercial. That it's commercially dumb is not inconsistent with it being reasonable under the Shipping Act, so long as you can distinguish between them on a rational basis, which the port did, the commission found.
Your only ground for the difference is that one could leave and the other couldn't?
That is not the case. The difference is that one could leave and present, and if it had left, everyone agrees would have devastated transportation at the port, whereas MAR presented none of those risks or the benefits of retaining the carriers.
Can I ask you about about the commission's distinction of ball mill everybody's been talking about Ceres, but so in its order here, the commission says, the commission acknowledged that the favored tenant in that case was ready to leave, right?
Yes.
Okay. And said, but it did not expressly address the argument. That's what the commission says. But I don't see how that fits with what actually happened. The authority gave two considerations in that case for its decision, one of which was that the tenant was ready to leave. And then in the very next sentence, the commission says, these contentions afford no grounds for holding that the port did not violate the act. These contentions, and one of which was the acknowledged threat to leave. Why isn't that a holding by the commission under those circumstances that a threat to leave, they don't discuss its consequences at all, threat to leave, is not a transportation factor, which the commission has to either distinguish or overrule here.
I agree that it did address the argument. It didn't explain why that argument was invalid. And so it just says these contentions provide no reason. That doesn't give any explanation.
It doesn't need to give an explanation. It just, all we know is that there is a commission holding that a threat to leave is not a basis for, is not a transportation factor. That's all we know. Why isn't that a holding that a threat to leave is, that has to be distinguished? I guess I just don't see how you can distinguish how, because it's not true that the commission, but did not specifically address the argument. That's what the commission says. But the fact is the commission in Ballmill rejected it, specifically rejected it.
I would agree with Your Honor that it was a holding. It did reject it.
Yeah.
And Ballmill stands at most for the proposition that a mere threat to leave is not enough. I agree with that.
Uh-huh.
But the commission in its order says that it's unclear. This is page J1044 in the commission's order in this case. It says it's not clear whether it can never be a valid transportation factor or whether the alleged threats in those cases were not substantiated by the evidence. And what the commission was saying there is there were no findings in Ballmill that if the tenant, which was a lumber wholesaler, the largest one, granted, mm-hmm. had left the port, it would have an effect comparable to carrier Sea Land and Maersk from leaving the port in this case, which everyone agreed and the evidence substantiated was a devastating threat to the port. Mm-hmm. So that's the distinction in Ballmill. The commission used the word
address. Suppose in the same situation, giving this preferential treatment to Maersk Sealand would result in the other longshore companies going out of business. Was there anything stopping Maersk from taking the business of other carriers besides Sealand?
Well, I mean, there was a port guarantee which sort of encouraged it not to poach cargo.
Yeah, but there was nothing preventing them.
No, nothing preventing them.
So suppose then all the other longshore companies, these are longshore companies, aren't they, basically?
Stevedore, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, Stevedore and longshore, same thing, from my experience years ago.
Yes, Your Honor.
And suppose the others all went out of business, or there was contemplated they all went out of business. It would still be okay?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily? It'd still be a transportation factor as far as you're concerned.
Right, but the commission would be weighing that against the fact that...
So the commission has to weigh these. That was my point before. The commission at least has to weigh the economic impact of this, right?
I mean, if there's evidence to that degree, it might be something the commission can consider.
Well, if you're giving a preferential rate to one competitor... In a market, I don't see how you can avoid considering what the impact of that will be. Now, to be sure, you're right. The original CEO of Mahler said it was needed to keep Maersk and Sealand for the port. But his view is not the same view as the present owners or perhaps other owners. But anyway, that's sort of factual and episodic. The question I'm trying to understand is the legal question, which I'm not sure that the commission has really thought about.
And I'd also point out, it may not satisfy you, but at least responsive to your question, that on page 13 of the commission's order, that's JA 1022, when it's going through the voluminous record explaining and weighing the evidence, It says, after the execution of the leases in 2000, the port's share of the Atlantic Coast container volume increased and MAR was generally profitable. So, I mean, is that lying? There's certainly no indication that MAR was losing business being poached until the Great Recession hit, and which everyone was affected.
Let me, I just want to pursue the point Judge Silverman was making earlier about the difference between the commission's brief and its order here. You have many, many pages in your brief where you explain why a threat to leave can qualify as a transportation factor. What in the decision is the best? What do you rely on in the decision for that proposition, the commission's decision?
The commission's position that a threat to leave can...
Uh-huh.
Right. Well, the commission didn't come out and say and use those words.
Right. That's my whole point. What are we reviewing here?
Well,
we can't review your brief.
The question is, it's not whether it used those words, it's whether it's the commission's path and reasonably followed.
Okay, where's that? Tell me that. I agree. The question how do I follow this path? The decision of the commission.
Absolutely.
Point me to the specific link.
I'll take you through it.
Yeah, go ahead.
On page 28, the commission sets out the burden and the burden shifting framework that it applies.
Okay, got it.
And let me try to get this so I can get JA numbers.
Okay. I got all that.
JA 1037. Sets out the burden shifting framework.
You're right, but that's not my question.
1038 through 1039, it finds in the first two elements. Then it goes. Then the next question is, under the shifting framework, is that the respondent, the port, must come forth with evidence justifying its preferential rent. Uh-huh. The commission addressed that evidence and set it out. Then it turned to Mara and said, given this evidence, which on its face relates to transportation. There's no more fundamental transportation factors than the fact that the
Wait a minute. The commission never used the term transportation factor, did it?
No, it did not.
So, although we are required to give Chevron deference to interpretation of language, it necessarily requires the commission to interpret the language in the first place.
Yes.
And here you don't have it.
And
that's a big gap, isn't it?
Well, legitimate transportation factors is not in the statute. The statute says unreasonable and undue. And they interpret that language.
But still,
it doesn't use
the transportation factor point. Is that what you're
It doesn't use the words transportation at all,
yeah.
What you're saying.
The shipping act doesn't, no.
So
I thought you were going to point me to JA 1043, and maybe, once again, I've misunderstood. At the, on JA 1043, it says, Mayor, at the first full paragraph, Mayor also argues that a carrier's threat to leave a port is not a legitimate justification under commission law because, quote, a valid transportation purpose pertains only to differences in the nature or cost of the services provided. Now, I had thought that a valid transportation purpose is just another way of saying transportation factor or whatever.
It is. I hope I was getting there, but 1043 for the next pages.
If that's the case, then the next two pages explain their view by interpreting series, perhaps wrongly, for the proposition that a threat answers that question.
That is correct. The commission goes. Mar had to show that these reasons were not legally cognizable under this court's burden shifting framework, which was endorsed in Petkim. It made these arguments. The commission addressed them and explained why.
The other two judges are asking you, where is the phrase transportation factor or whatever in here? And I see the words transportation purpose, and I thought that's where you were addressing it.
I agree.
Maybe I'm misreading it.
No, you're not misreading it. That's where the commission uses that word to the extent that using those particular words are necessary. It uses them there and explains its conclusion and its reasoning.
Okay. Further questions?
No.
All right. Now I'm out of time, right?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. We'll give you another 2 minutes. You don't have to spend any more time on series because opposing counsel agreed with you.
I promised not to.
There you have it.
Thank
Go
you.
Ahead. And what about this JA 1043? You were complaining, I don't mean complaining in a pejorative sense, that the transport use of transportation factor wasn't mentioned in the opinion. Isn't this what you mean by that at JA 1043, that a valid transportation purpose pertains only to differences in the nature or cost of the services provided?
Your Honor, yes, and if we go on from there, if we can, to 1044,
uh-huh.
So the actual purported explanation starts there.
Mm-hmm.
And they say there's little commission precedent relevant to whether a port authority may take into account mm-hmm. a carrier's threat to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So they say that.
They then go through and distinguish the cases, or try to, that we say prevent them from doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But what they never go on to do is to say, okay, those cases we don't think bind us, and here's why we think doing this is a valid transportation factor. There's no discussion at all on that that actually addresses the issue and faces up to it. You know, so you've got that problem. You've got the problem of not, I would say, sort of honestly and forthrightly dealing with both Ball Mill and with Ceres. And, you know, the question
is, what's the answer to counsel's argument that, well, in Ball Mill, they said there's no evidence as to whether the threat, what damage it would do?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't.
Ball Mill, the commission says here, well, Ball Mill's different because, yes, we said that factor was not enough, but there was no, there's no evidence in the record as to what effect the threat would have had.
Okay, so what the order actually says about Ball Mill is, it is therefore not clear whether the commission in Ball Mill and Ceres, let's forget Ceres for the moment, determined that a threat to leave a port can never be a valid transportation factor, or whether the alleged threats in those cases were not substantiated by the evidence. Uh-huh. So they're relying on the second part there. And sure, what we know is there's nothing in Ball Mill that suggests that the threat to leave was not substantiated by the evidence. As Your Honor pointed out, Judge Tatel, quite to the contrary, they state the allegation in Ball Mill and say that's not enough. So this was a ruling of law, not one of insubstantial evidence. And of course, ultimately, as Judge Silverman suggested, you know, they've got to wrestle with this question of, if they're not going to give us the same, the benefit of the same rates, why not?
So all they would have to say, if we send this back, all they'd have to say about Ball Mill, to do it properly, that is to follow standard rules of administrative procedures here, they would have to say, it's not, we acknowledge Ball Mill, but to the extent it suggests that a threat would not be a factor in the absence of evidence of damage, we overrule it, right? That would be okay.
Your Honor, I think that they could deal with Ball Mill and Ceres by saying that they overrule them to the extent that they held what we're suggesting. Right. But then they'd have to further wrestle with, why is it that what was threatened here?
They need to go on and state affirmatively what the theory is, not just by rejecting your arguments.
That's exactly it, Your Honor. Right. And as noted, we think these rules about having to explain yourself are there for a reason. We're not asking to be sent back just to lose.
We got your point. I have a specific question on timing. You made this, the original lease that Meyer signed was, what, 2000?
2000.
2001, was it? 2000?
It was 2000. It was June of 2000. Sorry.
The same time as, and what was the date of the Maersk?
Maersk was January of 2000.
The same year?
Yeah.
Now, there's no question your CEO at the time thought it was a good thing because he was desperate to hold Sealand and Maersk.
He thought two things. He thought it was a good thing, and he thought he should get the same rate, and he said both.
Did he say that?
Yes,
he specifically asked for the same rate.
Absolutely asked for the same rate.
I wanted to make sure.
Where
that's
did he say that? Could you just show us where he said that?
No, of course, Your Honor. It's in a couple of different places. Sorry, it's taken me a moment.
Take your time, it's important.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think.
So he says that there's a letter here, page 34 of, okay, so we cite it in on page 34 of our final brief.
Where is it in the record?
Let's see. Mr. Maher wrote this letter with the understanding. So the, what we're citing there is the JA at 152. The Port Authority has consistently stated its desire to provide a level playing field. And if we go to JA 152.
Wait. JA 152 is where? A fairly level playing field, it says. Whatever that is.
Jesus.
There's quite a bit here, Your Honor, and I'm sorry I'm not getting to it fast enough for you. It's stated both in a memorandum. Okay, here it is. I've got it. So JA-264 is a better site. Thank you for handing it up to me. JA-264, they say, and this is a letter from Brian Marr to the executive director of the Port Authority of New York. So he says, in our view, it's the Port Authority's responsibility to set rent levels that are competitive with other ports in the East Coast, which provide a level playing field. And at the end of the paragraph, it says, Maersk competes with It's the second full paragraph.
On 264?
264, if you go to the last sentence, although it's informed by the text before it, he says, Marr Terminals competes with all of the other marine terminals in the port, regardless of whether they are steam.
I'm sorry, it's not your fault. I'm sure it's mine. I'm on JA-264.
Yeah, last sentence of the second paragraph.
Second full paragraph. I see. Okay, go
so
ahead.
So Marr Terminals competes with all of the other marine terminals in the port, regardless of whether they are steamship controlled or not, and therefore must have comparable pricing. And then the next page, at the conclusion, the second to the last sentence, says, in order to justify this intended investment that Marr's making, essentially, the port must be competitive and we must be on a level playing field with our competitors within the port. By the way, he also said it in his letter to Governor Whitman, which is, you know, part of the record here. When he's telling her, please do this, he also indicates that he expects the other terminals will get the same deal. None of this is actually controverted by the other side, and it's been discussed in the briefing here. What the other side will point out is that the port said, we're not guaranteeing you're going to get that, because he asked for a level playing field, and they said, we're not putting a most favored nations clause in your, your contract.
What was the date of this lease, of the mayor's lease, Marr's lease?
Marr's lease that we're working on right now, it's October of 2000.
October of 2000. And when was the mayor's lease?
It was January of 2000.
Okay. How long does the mayor lease extend? What's the term?
These are 30-year leases, Your Honor.
30 years?
Ours is a 30-year lease. And, you know, what happened, and again, this is, there's a fellow named Mosca who was one of the fellows from Marr who was deposed, and I can find the site for this, but he was asked, well, why did you say yes ultimately, even though you wanted to have the same rate? Why did you say yes? And he said, well, if we hadn't said yes, they would have rebid our terminal, and you know the port could have come up with any number of reasons why it didn't want to deal with the Marr's anymore.
So I'm a little concerned about the statute of limitations. I appreciate it's not quite before us, but it does seem a little odd. So this was entered into, you said, in 2000, and the first owners, Marr, didn't sue, right?
That's right.
Sued when?
It was around 2008, Your Honor, 2009.
And that's outside the statute of limitations for a suit, right?
What they found is that it's outside of the statute of limitations if what triggers the suit is the original signing of the contract.
Yes.
But they left open the question whether there's a continuing violation, given the nature of these statutes, in maintaining an unlawful preference.
So that would be different than the Ledbetter, the Supreme Court's opinion in Ledbetter, which said that each new paycheck is not a new violation, right?
They left open the question of whether it is.
And what's happened with that? What did they left open?
Well, Your Honor, what happened was we lost on the liability, so they haven't had to.
So the statute of limitations has not been decided by the FMC?
No, and the only thing that they've really even addressed at all, by the way, was the statute of limitations for the claim for reparations, not for the cease and desist part of this.
And that's.
And they also didn't address the section 411.02, unreasonable practices, and whether that has a different statute of limitations. That's still open.
Further questions from the panel?
It could be, I was probing this further. There could be a change in the economic circumstances between the two port operators over time with a 30-year lease that could give rise to a new cause of action even if there wasn't one originally. But that all is not before us. As the Chief Judge pointed out, the statute of limitations wasn't raised. But I could see how with a 30-year lease you could have a shift in situations which makes a preference unreasonable when it wasn't originally unreasonable.
That's right, Your Honor.
Yes. All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your indulgence.
Likewise. We'll take the matter under submission.